MenaWatch, der unabhängige Nahost-Think Tank.
Dear Professor Dan Shuftan, you are an important analyst of the actual situation in the Near East. I would like to ask you to give an overview after I introduced you. You have been leading the international and the national program for security studies at the University Haifa until 2018. And you also have been teaching at the National Defense College of the IDF. Parallel, you have been teaching in Washington to questions of security since the 70s, informing members and workers at the US Congress. In Europe, you have been also informing ministers, parliamentarians, political leaders, people from the government. You are very famous for clear statements. So thank you very much that you are talking to MenaWatch and to me today. Please give us overview about the situation at the moment.
Okay, let me indeed give an overview, because I believe that most people who deal with the war are so obsessed with specific issues, important issues, but specific issues, that they don't see the overall significance. And I think it is a significance not only for Israel, not only for the Middle East, but for Western civilization in the broadest sense of the term. So in your terms, I would like to speak about die große Zusammenhänge of what is happening here since October 2023. This is the first war of the 21st century. The war we're having in Ukraine today is a 20th century war. There are armies, they occupy territory, they withdraw from territory. Yes, civilians are hit, but the war is between armies. Here, there is an attempt by the radicals in the Arab world to bring about the destruction of the state of Israel by using not just terrorism, but actually by forcing Israel to wage a war of the kind that they believe that Israel cannot wage for very long. And one very important point that I want to stress right now, most Arabs in the Middle East, or at least most responsible Arab regimes in the Middle East, want Israel to succeed. Even though they criticize Israel very badly because their public opinion is radicalized, when it comes to their position, they understand that unless Israel is victorious, and by the way, Israel has already won the war in the most substantial way, and they're delighted with it. They know that if Israel is not victorious, they are in danger, because they're facing three different dangers. They're facing Iran, who wants to hegemonize the region, and Iran is strong enough to do it, and they realize how weak Arab regimes are. So they're afraid to be hegemonized by Iran. Even if Iran doesn't occupy them, it can do to other Arab states what it did to Syria, to Lebanon, to Yemen in a different way, what they are doing to Iraq in a very dangerous way. Jordan is now an objective for Iran trying to undermine Jordan. So they understand, Morocco understands it, Saudi Arabia understands it, the Emirates understand it. Iran is the number one enemy. Again, they're not supposed to say it, but that's what they very deeply and intimately know. Their second enemy is the Muslim Brotherhood. The Muslim Brotherhood is particularly dangerous because their people know how to pretend that they're modern. This medieval organization knows how to pretend to be modern and to cheat people like Obama in a way that Obama believes that here the Egyptians have voted for the Muslim Brotherhood. If God forbid we would not have had a military coup in Egypt, And we must be thankful for a military coup in Egypt. The result would have been that the Muslim Brothers would not only plunge Egypt into the medieval times, but also renew the Egyptian leadership of the all-Arab war against Israel, and the whole region would have negatively changed. If in Jordan, where also the Muslim Brothers are very strong, the Muslim Brothers take over, it will be a catastrophe. Jordan will look like the Gaza Strip if this is what is happening. And people in Egypt, in Jordan, in Morocco, in Saudi Arabia, in the Emirates understand how dangerous the Muslim Brotherhood is. The third enemy that the Arabs have is the profound inability of the Americans to do something that is not stupid. Now, are all the Americans stupid? No, but are they very often stupid? Yes. Americans believe that radicals are just misguided people who need to be helped to become positive and productive members of society. They believe that in every Saddam Hussein, there is a little Thomas Jefferson trying to come out, only he had a difficult childhood, so we have to give him humanitarian help, and then it will change. They don't understand. Radicals need to be broken, not appeased. Broken, not appeased. And when you have American presidents who have no clue about what is happening in the world, the worst president America had in foreign policy since the Second World War was Barack Obama. He caused enormous damage. I know that everybody in Europe loved him because the Europeans, before the war in Ukraine, were delighted about the Friede, Freude, Eierkuchen message that he was sending. I think that the Europeans are now much more realistic after the war in Ukraine. And by the way, I don't think that it's an accident that Putin went to the Ukraine when Obama was president, and then went to the Ukraine when Biden was president, because these guys don't understand the world. Now, do you have Americans who understand the world very well? Yes, Europe doesn't like them. Richard Nixon, Henry Kissinger, who made an enormous contribution to the Middle East. The fact that we don't have a war between Israel and Egypt is to a very large extent thanks to people the Europeans don't like Richard Nixon and particularly Henry Kissinger. So this is an enemy of the stability-seeking Arabs in the Middle East, that Americans, part of the Americans, like Jimmy Carter and Barack Obama, to mention only the worst that the United States had, completely misunderstand the Middle East and systematically support the enemies of the United States and the enemies of Israel, and undermine the allies of the United States, like Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and Israel. Or in the less problematic case of Biden, when he came to power, supported both the enemies of the United States, Iran, the Houthis, and also supported the allies of the United States. So Biden is not as bad as Obama, but when in the beginning of his presidency, to give only one example, when you have these barbarian tribes, the Houthis, taking over Yemen, not caring about their own population, starving their own population, then what Biden does is to take them off the terrorist list, put pressure on Saudi Arabia and the Emirates to stop the war against the Houthis, and gives them humanitarian help. So if you're attacked by a crocodile, give him a banana, and then he will become a poodle. I mean, this profound misperception about everything concerning Middle Eastern radicals that I am happy to say Biden started with but changed his position. He became very helpful in the struggle of Israel against Iran. He directly participated in it. After his policy failed terribly with the Houthis, he is now conducting military actions against the Houthis in collaboration with Israel. The American Central Command is bringing together Israel and Saudis and Emiratis and Jordanians in a Middle East air defense system to defend Israel from Iranian missiles. There he changed his policy. But Americans, if they would have had their way, Israel would have lost this war, because in Gaza they wanted to stop the war before Israel achieved its main objectives. In Lebanon, it would have been a catastrophe if Israel would have listened to the Americans, preventing Israel, wanting to prevent Israel from invading southern Lebanon and from bombarding in Beirut and from killing Nasrallah. And Israel scored a victory that strengthens the United States in spite of American policy. Now, the Americans were helpful vis-a-vis Iran late in the day, but they were not in the beginning of the Biden administration, but when the war started. Americans were also helpful in getting a good ceasefire in Lebanon after the Israelis did the extreme opposite of what America suggested and therefore succeeded, and therefore America could come up with a good ceasefire in Lebanon because Israel didn't listen to their advice. So when Arab states see that Israel is fighting Iran and doesn't have any illusions about Iran, when Israel is fighting the Muslim Brothers and doesn't tie both its hands behind its back when it is fighting the Muslim Brothers, when the Arabs in the Gulf see that Israel can improve dramatically its relations with the United States in spite of doing the opposite of what Americans want Israel to do, and nevertheless strengthens the relations between Israel and the United States, this is exactly what Saudi Arabia wants to do. This is exactly what the Emiratis want to do. They want to improve their relations with the United States and not to listen to the dumb advice that Americans give them and the counterproductive pressure that the Americans give them when they wanted to fight the Houthis. So Israel's position in the Middle East is strengthened in a very major way. So the real question that we are asking ourselves, or we should be asking ourselves about the war, what is it about and what are the consequences of it so far? What it is about is the ability of civilized people to behave, to defend themselves against barbarians, even when the barbarians put their weapons in nurseries and schools and mosques and hospitals and UN facilities, and Israel will hit them wherever they go. Gaza is defended, is fortified. It is the most fortified position in human history, because it is fortified not only by missiles and by an underground city of hundreds of miles underground that is designed only to fight Israel, not to protect the civilian population. Gaza is also fortified by the New York Times and the BBC and Amnesty International and the Court of Justice in The Hague and the Criminal Court in The Hague and the United Nations and every progressive And I'm using progressive in the American sense of the term. I know that in Europe, it is not as radical as the American version of progressives. Every progressive who wants liberals to fight barbarians, not only with one hand behind his back, which I think is appropriate. You don't want to be a barbarian when you fight barbarians. So you tie one hand behind your back because you're a civilized person. But the progressives, the American version of progressives, want you to tie both your hands behind your back because you cannot possibly fight people who have a lot of pigments. Because if somebody has a lot of pigments, he must be a saint. And if you have a white skin, you must be guilty. And if you are a person from the West, then you are guilty of colonialism. And when somebody's grandfather suffered from colonialism, you must feel guilty about him, and you must let him behave like a barbarian, and you must support him in Harvard and in Columbia University and in Penn State, and you need to, revere the barbarians and have blasphemy concerning the civilized people. So Israel needs to prove and is proving that it can win in spite of Iran and in spite of the Muslim Brothers and in spite of the enemies of liberalism called progressives. Because one important thing to understand is that too much of a good thing is the enemy of the good thing. Too much nationalism, called fascism, is the number one enemy of healthy nationalism. You cannot have democracy and human rights without nationalism, because you need solidarity, and there is no such thing as universal solidarity. This is a fantasy of people who sit in universities cut off from real life. There is only national, hopefully European, solidarity one day, where you can have democracy and human rights. But if you have too much nationalism, you become a fascist, and you're the number one enemy of nationalism. If you have too much liberalism, you become the enemy of liberalism, because you're basically saying liberalism cannot defend itself, because you constantly feel guilty against the enemies of liberalism who try to kill liberals. And you try to put restrictions on them on a level that makes their defeat inevitable. So the question is, can Israel defeat the Hamas and Muslim Brothers and the barbarians in Tehran and the progressives that try to undermine the ability of liberals to defend themselves? And here is the interesting point. In order to have a life worth living for a civilized person, you should have both nationalism and liberalism. In the Israeli case, we call it a Jewish and democratic state. Jewish representing nationalism and democratic representing liberalism. And if you want to defend the Jewish democratic state, you need to be able to do what Israel is doing now, not without mistakes. I don't know of humans who've done something without mistakes. Angels don't make mistakes. Humans do. Believe it or not, Israelis are human. So they also make mistakes. But basically, Israel managed to wage this war in the most fortified place in the world, with dramatically less civilian casualties than any civilized army ever in human history fighting terrorists in an urban environment. Never before. The Americans are not half as good as Israel. The Brits are not half as good as Israel. We are much better than anybody else. Are we perfect? No. Do we make mistakes? Sometimes by killing our own soldiers. Okay? Yes. It happens. But are we better than anybody else? And when somebody is so depraved and sick that he speaks about Israel in terms of genocide, then not only is he stupid and intellectually underdeveloped and he never opened the dictionary, but he is also morally twisted and sick. So if this is what Harvard wants to educate their students, I think that over time, people will reconsider if they want to send their children to such a place. Let me put it this way. Sending your children to Gaza is less dangerous than sending them to Harvard, because in Harvard, you'll get them back intellectually underdeveloped and morally distorted. Not everybody, but this is what part of the faculty in Harvard will try to install into the students. And when you work together with barbarians who come from the Arab world, not everybody who comes from the Arab world is a barbarian, but I'm speaking about those barbarians who support Hamas. If you want to join forces with them and to have this great thing about queers for Palestine, okay, you must be completely sick and twisted in order to go in this direction. But Israel can afford to disregard it. Israel can afford to ignore it. Israel proved in the last 16 months that it can win this war regardless of the Iranians and the Muslim Brothers and the progressives. And I think, and here I want to end my introduction, to end the overview, and then we can discuss more specific issues. Israel has already won a very important part of the war by achieving primarily three things. A, devastating Gaza was necessary for operational reasons, because practically every house was booby-trapped or was a military arsenal or was a military outpost. And they say so openly. I mean, they're proud of it. So there was no way but to destroy these military installations. But the message throughout the Arab world is, you cannot barbarically attack Israel, kill Jews, rape their women, decapitate their people, abduct their babies, and get away with it. You can't get away with it. And if they would have gotten away with it, they would have been dramatically more popular in Egypt and in Jordan, and they would have taken over Egypt and Jordan, and the whole Middle East would have plunged into a war. So this is what victory means in Gaza. Does it mean that Hamas will not come back? It will come back on a smaller scale. It will come back. And Israel will continuously destroy it and kill its terrorists. And it doesn't look good, and we'll do it because without it, we cannot live. In Lebanon, we thought that Hezbollah is a major threat to Israel on a strategic level that we have no good answer for. Because whereas Hezbollah could not destroy Israel, with the hundreds of thousands of their projectiles, they could have made life in Israel impossible for a long period of time. This is what we believed on the eve of the war. But when we went to war with Hezbollah, a year after Hezbollah started and continued the war with us, we destroyed their strongholds in Beirut, wherever it takes, wherever they had military installations, we destroyed it regardless of what it looks on television. Because if you allow the optics of it to defeat you in war, then you are being irresponsible to your own people by giving up the absolute need to defend them. And we did it with very, 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 very little collateral damage in Lebanon. And now what seemed to be an insurmountable strategic problem is a major nuisance. Is it still problematic? Yes. Do you have a victory once and for all? No. But have you reduced dramatically the threat to Israel? Yes. And we also exposed the extreme vulnerability of Iran, not only by showing that there is very little Iran can do against us, but also by showing that we have a freedom of action to do whatever we think is necessary to do in Iran itself. Does it solve the problem? No, but is the situation dramatically better than on October 7th, 2023? Yes, dramatically. Israel's position is dramatically better, and the radicals' position in the Middle East is dramatically weaker, and the position of moderate Arabs, thanks to Israel, is dramatically better in the Middle East, and the radicals, the progressives, are being exposed for what they are. People who come from La La Land and would cause civilized people to lose the battle against barbarians. In Europe, it is already exposed. In the United States, it is beginning to be exposed. So to the extent that you can have a victory in a war, in a very, very difficult war of the kind that unfortunately the 21st century will see more and more, in this kind of war, Israel achieved already an important victory. Is it total victory? No, there is no such thing. Not in the 21st century. Will it make Israel safe on the level that it will no longer need to use violence in order to defend itself? No. Do some people don't like Israel? Yes, you can ignore it. By the way, we Jews are used to it. We are used to being hated for the wrong reasons by the wrong people, by radicals, both on the right and on the left. We used to be hated only by radicals on the right. Now we are delegitimized and hated also by radicals on the left. What is new? Okay? And the wrong kind of people who came to Europe from the Middle East and from Afghanistan and Pakistan and so on, join in, and they will cause much more damage to Europeans than the damage that they can cause to Israel. So is it unpleasant? Yes. Are we used to live in an unpleasant environment? Yes. And when we have to defend ourselves, being pleasant is not the top priority that we have. So let me stop here. I think I provoked enough, and now we can have a more specific discussion.
Thank you so much, Dan. This is a very good introduction and the situation background. This was part one. We will have a second part that goes into the facts about Iran, about Syria, about Turkey, about Lebanon, and this will follow up within the next days. Thank you for listening and hope to see you.
Eine Produktion von MENA Watch, dem unabhängigen Nahost-Think Tank. Auf unserer Website finden Sie täglich aktuelle Informationen und Analysen. Besuchen Sie uns. Eine Produktion von MENA Watch, dem unabhängigen Nahost-Think Tank. Auf unserer Website finden Sie täglich aktuelle Informationen und Analysen. Besuchen Sie uns.